Thanks everybody for coming. It's great to come here because if it weren't for the Berkman Center and this place and its people and its events, I very much doubt I would be doing what I'm doing now. So it's very appropriate to come and talk to you. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my new venture, newassignment.net, and what some of its purposes are. And then we can talk about it. So this is this site, newassignment.net. The subtitle, as you can see, is Open Source Reporting Gets Tested. Our symbol is a pencil, a very humble number two pencil, because everybody has a pencil. Everybody is competent to use a pencil. And if you left your house to go on a quick reporting assignment, the one thing you'd want to make sure you took would be a pencil. So that's why you see the pencil. The purpose and mission of newassignment.net is pretty simple. I think it's simple, at least. One goal: spark innovation in open source reporting. That's our only business. That's our only purpose in life. And by spark innovation, I mean spark innovation anywhere, in our own work, among others, within the news media itself, other citizen journalism sites, anywhere works for purposes of what we're doing. A second mission would be to find out whether what I call the pro-am style, professionals and amateurs working together, can actually work. We think it can. There's good reason to think that there would be strength in such a hybrid, but we don't know for sure because there hasn't been all that much pro-am work. So that's another mission of ours. A third mission is to figure out whether there can be a gift economy for news. A gift economy for news. Gift economy is different than a market economy. In a gift economy, the winners are the ones who give something of the most value away. That's what a gift economy is. In ancient cultures, tribal cultures, where there is a gift economy, if you give a bigger gift than your host, then you have, in a sense, won over your host. So the more you give away, the more you win. That's how a gift economy works. And what we're trying to figure out is whether a gift economy, meaning people giving their money, their time, their effort, their expertise, their sources, their knowledge, their training, their background, whether that kind of economy can support news. You could say nonprofit, but it's more than nonprofit. It's a gift. So we don't know if there can be open source journalism. It makes sense that there could be, but we don't know that it can work. We don't know whether pro-am collaboration can work. It should be able to, but we don't know. And we don't know if there can be a gift economy for news, but we're going to try and find out. So that's what this site, newassignment.net, is about. It's not a business. It's not going to be the next startup sold for $1.5 billion. It's not really a new institution. It's just a way of organizing lots of people who are interested in these questions to figure them out. And so the real point is knowledge, new knowledge, which people who work in a university don't have to justify. That's our mission in life. Now, I want to give you a few more ways of describing what newassignment.net is, and I'll tell you a little bit about progress, and then we'll have a dialogue. Tim Berners-Lee, who is the creator of the World Wide Web — most things don't have a creator, but the World Wide Web does. This guy, Tim Berners-Lee, created it. And when he created it, he had a particular idea in mind, which I've highlighted here. This is a little piece he wrote in 96. The World Wide Web was designed originally as an interactive world of shared information through which people could communicate with each other. So his idea in giving birth to the World Wide Web was not that CNN would have another way of reaching you. It was to create a way for people to share information and collaborate. His concern as a scientist was there was tons of information for scientists on the internet. But this project was completely unable to communicate with that project. And if you didn't know this protocol, you couldn't find this data. And this information was stored over on that machine. And there was no way for all of this knowledge that was already on the internet to actually come into a common space and be worked with by a group of people, which of course is how science works. So his original point in creating the World Wide Web was to enable collaboration. But in the way that the web developed, it didn't develop initially as a collaboration medium, it developed as a mass medium or a publishing medium, a way to distribute, a way to broadcast, a way to express. And the collaboration part has been less important. So newassignment.net is an attempt to turn up the volume, as it were, on the collaboration side of the World Wide Web. And that's one way of understanding what it is. The first generally accepted use of the term open source journalism was in 1999, this piece in Salon that talks about an episode where this journal, Jane's Intelligence Review, published an article about cyber terrorism on the net that was a draft, and then invited users of Slashdot, the geek site, to comment on this article and improve it and suggest what ought to be in it. And Salon picked up on why that was potentially important and wrote this piece, Open Source Journalism, about the potential that that simple act held. And that was 7 years ago. We're still trying to collect on this original idea in 1999 that lots of people contributing what they know could actually make journalism a lot better. So that's another way of describing what newassignment.net is. In 2002, you'll remember, Trent Lott, the Senate Majority Leader, lost his job. You remember that? Why did he lose his job? Well, it started when he went to a birthday party for Strom Thurmond on Capitol Hill. Strom Thurmond was turning 100 years old. Trent Lott went to his birthday party, got up and made a few remarks. What he said was, Mississippi voted for Strom Thurmond in 1948, and if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have all the problems we have today. And this was a strange statement because Strom Thurmond in 1948 ran an almost explicitly racist campaign. So it seemed that Trent Lott was saying that it would have been a good thing had this explicitly racist campaign triumphed. Now, at the time, there were some journalists in the room. There was a producer for ABC there. There was another one for CBS. There were some newspaper reporters there. And most of them didn't see any particular significance in what Trent Lott said. And the reason they didn't see any particular significance in what Trent Lott said is that they didn't know shit about 1948 and what happened in Strom Thurmond's campaign. They just didn't know enough. Now, the chances of an individual 20-something television news producer not knowing the relevant background for Trent Lott's statement were actually pretty high, better than 50%. But the chances of the blog network not knowing this relevant background once it got a hold of it were zero. Zero. Because there is no doubt that the interconnected world of blogs would see why this statement was significant. And so that difference between the knowledge available to an individual practitioner or two and the background knowledge available to the network is huge. And newassignment.net is trying to collect on that moment as well. So that's another way of describing what this project is about. Today, one of the biggest things changing the world is that the cost for like-minded people to find each other, share information, and work together is falling rapidly. The cost and the difficulty for like-minded people to find each other, share information, and work together is falling rapidly. This fact is going to change politics, it's going to change commerce and business, education, and I believe it's going to change journalism. And so another way of describing what newassignment.net is, it's a project attempting to incorporate this fact and learn its lessons for journalism. So we're trying to figure out what this fact, falling cost for like-minded people to share information, means for works of journalism. Dan Gilmer, as you know, famously said, I still think this is one of the most important things anyone has said in journalism recently, and my friend Dan Kennedy, who is here, just wrote a fantastic profile of Dan Gilmer for Commonwealth Magazine, which we can find on the web, right? Dan Gilmer famously said, my readers know more than I do. My readers know more than I do, which he discovered as a tech columnist and early blogger for the San Jose Mercury News in Silicon Valley. If what Gilmer said is true, there should be consequences for reporting projects. And that's another thing newassignment.net is. It's attempting to find out whether Gilmer was right, and if so, how we put that to work. Gilmer also said, after the failure of his initiative, Bayosphere, to take off, that it turned out that it was harder to get people to volunteer and participate than he thought, or words to that effect. In a very candid assessment of that project, he made this observation. My way of putting it is that if you create the capacity for people to participate, that does not mean that the activity will follow. Capacity does not itself create activity. And so what newassignment.net, which is a second stage citizen journalism effort, is trying to do is learn the lesson of that law. Capacity does not by itself create activity. Therefore, you need to do more than simply open up the capacity. Or another way, a shorter way to put it is, if you build it, they won't necessarily come. If you build it, they won't necessarily come. You have to do more than that. And what else you need to do is part of our puzzle. I talk to a lot of journalists. I have a lot of readers within the press. I've been to a lot of conferences where the big changes that are coursing through the press are discussed. Rebecca and I have been to a number of these events where old media journalists meet new media people. And one gets accustomed to what the profession says in reply to things like the rise of blogging, the rise of citizen journalism, the emergence of the web. And one of the things that journalists say most often, most commonly, is that they'll say something like, well, blogging is great. It's great that you have this new thing, blogging. It's great to get more voices in the conversation. It's great. But blogs are basically op-ed. You know what I mean, Dan? That's sort of a pretty common attitude. And you can almost hear them say, blogs are basically op-ed. You know, like with a sigh of relief. Because in their view, what this means is that these disruptions, the rise of blogging, citizen journalism, citizens media, are never going to touch the thing that really distinguishes journalism, which is reporting new information, original data, stuff you didn't know. And this is the typical kind of response from a mainstream journalist to what's happened since 1999. That it's great there are all these new people out there, but basically what they're doing is adding their opinions. Well, this is annoying. It's very annoying to listen to journalists do this. And that's another thing newassignment.net is. It's an attempt to go right to the heart of what journalists think only they can do, which is investigative reporting, and show that actually not even that is exclusively yours, even though you think it is. So that's another way of describing what we're trying to do. Finally, if you go to this site, newassignment.net, and you scroll down a little bit, you come to this related sites. You see this related sites column here? They just about fit the screen. So if you look at this list, which I compiled myself, it ranges across many different kinds of sites, from French citizen journalism site. There's a defect on our page. To an American commercial site for neighborhood information, to this kind of a thing, a nonprofit, where this is basically open source history, to there's a really cool project some of you may not know about. Open source patent review.
Oh, cool.
Which is an attempt to recruit expertise that the patent office doesn't have so that when the United States Patent Office makes decisions, it can do so with a lot more intelligence than its own staff can possibly marshal. To to a very commercial site. Go to a really big corporation site, it always takes longer because their ads have to load. So this is the MSNBC's Be a Citizen Journalist. Two things that are more commonly thought of as social media, like Reddit, where the crowd ranks things and the wisdom of the crowd comes through, all the way to arguably the most important of them all, is Wikipedia. So another way of describing what newassignment.net is it's the child of all of those sites. It's what's learned, it's an attempt to learn the lesson of all those sites and put it into one. So those are some ways of figuring out, describing what we're doing. How's it going so far? I'll do 5 minutes in this and then we'll talk. The money chase went well for a little while. I raised $100,000 from Reuters for an editor. I'm a little bit stalled on this front now. I need some more money and it's getting a little bit tight, so I'm a little bit anxious about that. People chase has been great. Today's Press Think has an interview with a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter who basically got bounced from his job at the Times-Picayune, where they told him, we don't have any more room for you. And he quit because he thinks the future of investigative reporting is on the web, and he's volunteered to be a contributing editor to newassignment.net. So this is an explanation of why he thinks there's promise in this idea. And this isn't some crazy citizen journalist. This is a hardcore, Pulitzer Prize-winning, top-notch, grade A investigative reporter who's joined up with us because he thinks there's a future there. So we've been able to attract people who are talented and professional. And that was one of the questions about whether we could or not. It seems so far we can. We've been able to attract partners in big media. We're going to do a joint project with Wired News, which probably will end up being our first project sometime in the winter of 2007. I almost have agreement to do a joint project in 07 with the BBC, which would be our first global project. We have another informal agreement to do something in 2008 on polling places with the WashingtonPost.com. And there are several other media partners that are interested in collaborating with Simon.net because they themselves sense that there is something exciting here that's going to work. They just don't know what. So that's doing well. In drawing talented people like Amanda Mickle, raise your hand, who is going to be our director of participation, we're doing well. And we also have a director of verification, Craig Silverman, who runs the site Regret the Error, is taking on the job of figuring out how a site like ours can have a fact-checking and verification system built in to make citizen contributions more reliable. And he's agreed to bite that piece off and develop that system based on other systems for making open source contributions reliable, and it's going to borrow those systems and adapt it to our purposes. So we've been successful in attracting people. We're going to do our first reporting project. We're calling it Assignment Zero. It's really our pre-launch project. Will be an attempt to find out, before we begin this chase, everything there is to know about best practices in open source reporting and open source projects generally. And we're going to ask users and volunteers to help us tap what's already known from existing work in this area so that when we start with every lesson there is already learned. Because to do otherwise would be criminal, in my opinion, and a very unacademic way of going about things. So I like to know what I'm talking about. That's one of the highest virtues of the university, know what you're talking about. So what we're going to try to do in our first assignment, which we're calling Assignment Zero, is collect everything that we can using our own resources and those that we can attract and volunteers that we can draw to this project to learn the lessons of open source projects so far and build them in to our project. That leaves a lot of things that we still haven't figured out, but that's the point of doing this. So here are the major unknowns. Is there really a gift economy for news? We don't know. We're going to find out. Can volunteer contributions, such as we're attempting to tap, be made reliable? We don't know, but we're going to try and find out. Can you, in fact, bring pros and amateurs together to collaborate? We don't know. And can you develop a community of people who want to see open source methods like these work journalistically? Can such a community emerge? This is one of the biggest puzzles. We don't know the answer to that either. But we're going to try and find out, and we need the help of people like yourselves. That's my introduction. What are your questions, concerns, problems, and objections?
Could you flesh out a little more how you envision a story being? Have you gotten that far? Is it going to be an author from someplace with a story that is unalterable by others? Is it a wiki? Is it something else?
Right. Well, we're going to do project-based journalism. And the origin of a new assignment.net story could, in fact, come from many different places. It could be an editor-driven thing. It could come from users themselves. It could come from writers. What I want to do is not make any prior decisions about that and be open to all directions. But to take an example that I've discussed with the BBC, the project that I'm discussing with the BBC is how do people vote, secure their vote, and create confidence in the ballot all over the world? From the African village to the town in Finland to a Japanese city to Cobb County, Georgia. And if we did that project, the first thing we would do is put out the call and every site we could find to help us discover how do people vote and secure their vote all over the world. And there would be a preliminary round of information gathering. And based on the results of that first round, we would be able to shape the assignment very carefully and very specifically based on what we found in our first run through. And that assignment would be displayed for users of the site on a single page, which we're calling for now the green page because we don't have a better name for it, where you find everything about this assignment, what it's called, a capsule description, what kind of questions we're interested in, how we propose to find them, what we need to get the answers, a timetable, a deadline, what the final product would look like, and what, how many volunteers we need and for what, all on a single page. If we're able to raise enough money and raise enough people who want to help us, we would then go forward that, with that project, and a much larger act of information gathering would take place. We bring all this data in. We would have to verify it. We'd have to double check it so we know it's true. And at a certain point, it would amount to materials for a writer to work with. And at that point, we would assign a writer, sort of like you would do in a regular freelance piece, who would master this material and bring in, let's say, an investigative story about building confidence in the vote all over the world, best practices, what works, what doesn't work. At the same time, you would have accumulated a very large database of information about how these things work all over the world. That would be a product. The story would be a product. In this case, the BBC would get an hour documentary out of it. That would be their product. And we would publish the results. So in each case, what we're going to ask volunteers to do is going to be different depending on the project. And what I want to do is learn how to structure, design, and appeal to volunteers so that different kinds of people can contribute. If you're the kind of self-motivated person with a little journalism background and training, so that you can go out and do a story, an assignment, and bring back a completed story, we should be able to handle that. If you've got 2 hours to volunteer for this project and you want to do something valuable in those 2 hours, we should be able to handle that. If, on the other hand, you can say, I want to work in this over time and I can give you 5 hours a week, we should be able to handle that. And so what we want to do is learn how to be flexible enough and creative enough so that people who have a genuine desire to contribute can, in fact, contribute. But at the same time, we have to have a way of verifying their contribution and gaining confidence in it. So does that sort of answer your question?
It does.
I'd like you to elaborate on this gift economy, because I just want to know if the job of the editor-in-chief of this project, instead of looking for advertising, is going to be looking for grants. Or how do you think of sustaining something like this? Because
well, when I say gift economy, I mean that this project will be sustained by gifts of different kinds. And the newassignment.net site is really a donation site, if we understand donation broadly. So that we need people who are willing, in some cases, to donate money. That might be one thing we would ask for. But also people who are willing to donate time, donate their effort, donate their knowledge, their expertise. And so the gift economy is really all those gifts at once. Will an editor be spending all this time raising money? No, that would not yield good results because that takes away from the work of an editor. So one thing I hope to find, and boy, I'm sure this person exists at Harvard, it's just a question of how to find them. So I want to hire, not hire because they don't have any money, I want to find a director of donation whose job it is to figure this puzzle out. And if that person succeeds, the editor won't have to do that. But the editors aren't going to be completely insulated from the budgeting and money raising part, because that's part of how an assignment comes together. And we're going to figure out what we need. There may be certain assignments that can be done with almost no cash, just by organizing enough people properly. But we'll have to figure out how the donation puzzle works. And it's hard to know until you have a community of users what those users are willing to give. Yes, Erica.
I've got a question from Jake Shapiro, who's one of our fellows and works on Public Radio Exchange on IRC. And he's interested in your take on two emerging efforts in this same kind of vein, radio open source and Minnesota Public Radio's public insight journalism.
Right.
He wonders if there's lessons that you've already learned from those. I should also say Brendan Greeley from Radio Open Source is also on webcast at IRC.
Right. Well, I love open source radio. Chris Lydon's one of my pals. I've been on that show several times. I think it's a very good show. I would like to see them do more open source reporting, but I think they're still learning how to do a radio show that isn't dominated by the professional model of radio broadcasting, in which the pros know everything, the people out there know nothing, and you keep everyone out. And they are breaking down those walls and saying, we're going to have a radio show where you try to bring people in. So just that effort itself is significant because it's a very different attitude about broadcasting. You would think that public broadcasting, NPR-style radio, would be extremely open to the public. But in fact, in public broadcasting, there's a notion of professionalism, which is especially enforced through the notion of quality sound, quality technique, that in fact excludes almost everyone except the people who work for NPR and related professionals. So open source radio is doing important work just in breaking down those barriers. Public insight journalism, Minnesota Public Radio's project, has been very successful in signing up, I think it's over 20,000 people who have agreed to become part of their network of people who they would consult with on stories. However, their uses so far of that network are very, let's say, cautious, conservative. They come up with the ideas, Minnesota Public Radio comes up with the ideas, and they say, do you have any feedback? You know, do you have any tips for us? It can work, but my perception is that they've been cautious so far in how they use those 20,000 people. But signing up those people is itself an amazing, impressive feat. Yeah.
Jay, if I can read my students' minds for a moment, I would guess that they're sitting here thinking, gift economy, I've got student loans to pay off. what I'm wondering, other than sort of coming in after a process of data gathering and writing a story, what sorts of new roles do you think might be emerging for professional journalists if the open source model develops the way you hope it will?
Good question. I think that the challenge here is for professional journalists to learn how to do smart mob reporting, how to work with your own network of people and employ that network to break stories. And this is one of the things we hope to learn, is how does the reporter plus smart mob structure actually work? And how can it work to, as I said, break stories that would be hard to break any other way? So, for example, there's a bunch of reporters around the country who live in towns, let's say like San Antonio or Seattle, where they just cover a company. Like there's somebody at San Antonio News Express who just covers SBC or AT&T. Because it's a huge company and it has a huge effect on the local economy, and there's 50,000 people connected to that company in their circulation area, and it's a constant source of stories. So they need somebody reporting on that company. The Seattle Times, there's a reporter just on Microsoft. There's probably two or three. At the Star Ledger in Newark, they have three reporters covering the pharmaceutical industry. That's all they do. Well, a beat like that, let's say AT&T, is probably best done with a smart mob, because the individual reporters can only know a limited amount about the company. But if you had a network of people who work for AT&T, used to work for AT&T, spouse works for AT&T, supplier of AT&T, expert about AT&T, if you had all those people and you were able to organize them, you would be way better at your beat. So if you go to new assignment and you look at Amanda's story from a while ago. Find this. You know, remember what date it was where you did Regina?
No, but I can look for it.
Amanda did a story on trying to find this. Well,
is that already the journalist? We have sources in AT&T and friends.
Yes. Somebody asked me this morning, isn't this just like what we've always had? Reporters have always had sources, right?
Right.
Okay, so what's different now is the ability of those sources, or this network of sources out there, to talk to each other and to create a common space where they can add information to each other. And using that common space, putting into work the plunging costs of like-minded people to share information and collaborate is the difference. And organizing a network like that, making it efficient, finding a way to use it. Amanda's story was about a sex columnist for Wired. She writes about sex toys, sex machines. And the way she does her beat is she has a forum about that subject that's ongoing all the time, that the users themselves participate in for their own reasons, because they're interested in it. And the forum goes all the time. And when she wants to write a column, she asks the forum a question. Does anyone know anything about this? Hey, do you have any ideas about it? Have you ever experienced this? Have you ever heard of this? And the forum answers her back, and she makes regular use of this forum in her reporting. So that's kinda, sorta what we're talking about. And if you had an organized forum like that, and it was filled with very knowledgeable people, it would help you do your job. So I think that's the direction in which progress will be made.
A few questions. one just comment. The BBC collaboration, Voting Around the World, sounds like something that a lot of people in the Global Voices community would be very interested in working on, so we should talk more about that.
You're on the record.
I'm on the record. I'm sure there would be people interested. I guess my first question has to do with, as you're exploring all these different models and approaches and thinking about this, could you talk a bit more of what you think the division of labor, as it were, might be between the paid professionals who are working for news organizations, whose news organizations might pay them to participate in this project so that they produce things for their news organization in a way, freelancers who might be participating probably because they're motivated that this will result in a story that they can sell somewhere, and amateurs who are doing it for no pay, or people who are trying to become journalists and, you know, trying to break in and are sort of hoping that this will help them make a name for themselves. You know, so there's all these different categories of people.
Right.
I think the pure volunteer amateurs are going to tend to be motivated by fairly specific things that in order to stay engaged, they're going to need to feel that they're getting something back that's not monetary, but either that something will be exposed and as a result their lives will be improved, or their community will benefit, or they will gain recognition and status among people who they would like to have admiring them, or, you know, kind of whatever, they will gain power and influence somehow, or, you know, right, whatever it is. And I think depending on what your incentives are, you're going to end up being good at doing different types of things.
Right.
And we've started to see a little bit, I think, as we've watched all of this stuff on the web unfold, about what citizen journalism, citizen media on the web has been good at and what hasn't been so good at. One contrast being Wikipedia being so successful versus Wikinews not being very successful in terms of it is not a competitor to the wire services in a
right,
particularly meaningful way.
Right.
And I think there's reasons for that. It's really hard to get volunteers to get up at 3 a.m. and go, you know, document what happened at the explosion or, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
So I'm just curious to know your sense of how you see this division of labor breaking down and interacting.
It's a great question. Well, first of all, this is the this is the question. The division of labor and how we can arrive at a new division of labor is very much the kind of the research question here, the puzzle, right? Secondly, if you ask those who have participated in open source projects of one kind or another, how those projects work and what makes them successful, one of the first things they tell you is that you have to get people's motivations right.
Yep.
And if you misestimate what the motivations of people to contribute are, then your project is going to go wrong. Either no one will show up for your call, or you'll draw the wrong kinds of people, or your expectations will be out of line with reality. And so this is just by way of saying that we really have to think this through and find out. Third is, I think people will be driven by a range of motivations. There'll be a range of motivations. Some people will be motivated to contribute to a reporting project for what are essentially political reasons, meaning that it's an expression of what they believe should happen in society.
In which case, they probably won't be very objective.
Possibly.
But that maybe doesn't matter.
Possibly, but if we design the tasks right, that may not matter. Right? And especially if we are able to check them, that may not matter. So some of it will be that. Some people will no doubt want the visibility that comes classically through a byline. So that's one thing we do have, and the more successful new assignment that is, the more powerful that is, because then being on it, being in it, means something. Right? So that will be a motivation, I'm sure. For most people, however, I think the motivation will end up being that they believe in the project, they understand the project, they understand what you're trying to do, what you're trying to find out. And they have some reason why they want to contribute to that. So for example, one of the projects that's been suggested to us, and I think it's a pretty interesting one, is how family-friendly are America's companies really? Like, what are their actual policies? And you can ask the companies, but a better way to find out would be to ask the people who work for those companies. And so in that project, what is going to be the motivation for people? I think a lot of the motivation would be people who work for companies and think family-friendly policies ought to be the norm, or feel that companies are getting away with something.
They want to create change.
They want to create change, exactly. And they see the connection between the information that would be developed in this project and creating change, which our green page would have to spell out for them. So the real art here, however, is not to guess at what you think would be people's plausible motivations, but to try and find out, and then to respond to what there actually is, and to not allow your own ideas pre-existing to rule your design, because you could be wrong.
Exactly.
You could be very wrong. However, this piece of it, the motivations piece, is key. And what most is funny, because most professional journalists, in their minds, the only motivations they can think of for why citizens would be involved in something like this are essentially nefarious.
Yep.
People who want to bias the results,
yeah.
People who want to spin, people who want their view to prevail over everybody else's.
Yeah, most journalists I talk to who are not that familiar with blogging just can't believe that people will spend so much time not getting paid and doing this.
Right.
It just makes no sense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's what I love about the gift economy, is that it totally plays with people's minds who think they have human nature figured out. Why do people contribute to perfecting Firefox? It's not their product. They're not working for Firefox. They're not working for Mozilla. They don't get any money from it. Why do they do it? Well, they kind of believe that there should be a competitor to Microsoft. They like the fact that this open source product exists, right? They believe in the ideology of free software. And those motivations are very difficult to reckon with if your view of human nature is that people are exclusively self-interested all the time. They don't have any wider motivations. But this is a key part of the puzzle, and I don't think that I know enough to give you a good answer, so I'm giving you this very long.
Well, nobody has all the answers. But, yeah.
I have another question from IRC. Brendan Greeley from Radio Open Source.
Hi, Brendan.
Saying that when you were talking earlier about professionalism, that for them that actually means news judgment rather than the news production. They'll leave the production quality things up to the standards that they have access to, that they're community doesn't, but what happens when the editor, who's an experienced journalist, who's open to the open source methods, disagrees with the community on what to cover, or those kind of editorial level decisions?
Right. Well, in my vision of how this would work, an editor has a base of users, like a blogger has a loyal base of users. And there's a relationship there between the editor and the users. And the relationship is one of equals, but it isn't a command and control relationship. It isn't a master-slave relationship, and it's not a boss-employee relationship. It's a give and take, it's a dialogue. And so I think there are times when an editor has to stand up to a community of users, and there are times when an editor has to listen, and there are times when an editor has to blend what she knows with what users say. And I think it takes some art, it takes some tact, it takes the proper voice, and it's not a realm where you can be driven by rules and religion. It takes flexibility. So I know where he's coming from with that question, but I think it's going to be in the dynamic relationship between editors and users, just like there's such a relationship between bloggers and their users. In fact, I imagine a new assignment to that editor as blogger with a war chest or blogger with an army of stringers, so forth.
Brendan just wanted to add that if he's found that expectations have to be set from the very beginning in order for those relationships to be manageable, and that art that you were talking about ends up being the core of what is open source journalism, and that you have to be careful when educating people, especially those coming from a soft open source software community background. They may think open source means it's 100% community spread out decision, and not be used to that concept of the editorial voice. An editor's filter.
I agree with him 100%. Clear expectations, the art of setting clear expectations, is going to be totally crucial to this project. But I've already said a number of different times about this project that it is not a straightforward citizen journalism user-driven site. It'll never be a completely user-driven site.
So it seems like on this point that a lot of it's about creating a kind of an organizational culture or a culture,
yes,
those not just expectations that are explicit or not, but a feel, sort of the part about whether it's about objectivity or how decisions are made or the trust between these different communities.
Right.
And so I wonder what your views are on that, and maybe Rebecca would also weigh in with some of the experiences you have from GB as how you create that community, because it doesn't exist, right? I mean, this is a new innovation, and even within open source software development, there's definitely there are hierarchies and there are structures, right? They're not all as open as we've been and sometimes led to believe. But this is a new model, so I'm curious as to what you guys are both saying.
Global Voice is very centralized, actually. You know, we have a small number, you know, we have basically 20 people who are editors who are really posting every day. And they're, because what we really are, an edited aggregator. So people are just linking out to blog posts that people are posting everywhere on the web and selecting and saying, you know, here's my 5 to 10 links today of what everybody in the Middle East is talking about, and these are the 5 to 10 I think are the most interesting. You know, and so it's totally, you know, the our Middle East editor has 100% control over which links he's picking on any given day that he's recommending to our readers. Likewise, we have one volunteer for Egypt who posts once a week or so about what the Egyptian blogosphere is talking about. He's linking out to all kinds of people, and that is sort of broadly our community, and they kind of talk to us and so on. But this guy, it's up to him what he chooses to link to. You know, now he's obviously being influenced by what people out there are writing, you know. And so the community is not so much what's actually happening on our site. Our site is actually very, very centralized. You know, so we've got like 20 editors who are paid, by the way. Otherwise, we would never expect them to be doing nearly the amount of work they're doing, even though they're paid badly. And our volunteers really come and go. And we're actually engaged in a real kind of soul searching right now about how to retain volunteers, whether we're going to have to end up compensating them. And there are people who think we should. So there's a big argument about whether they should be compensated or not, and in different parts of the world the view is different on that and what the motivations are. And you know, what is your motivation to represent the Egyptian blogosphere to the rest of the English-speaking world? There are a lot of non-monetary motivations, but if we want it to be completely non-monetary, what else do we have to do for this person to make it worthwhile, you know, in terms of this person's sense of being involved in the community, this person's sense of having an impact on what the direction that Global Voices takes, you know. So a lot of the community building and motivation building also has to do with the extent to which we are opening up our decision-making to volunteers as well as to editors on an internal blog that we have. And, you know, all this kind of thing. So there's a lot of stuff just talking about process that's completely. But,
so that's kind of identifying and creating answer. The gift economy, right? I mean, that's sort of giving the currency of, that's creating that, or at least one aspect of it.
Yeah, but I mean, we're very different from NewAssignment.net because we're not actually doing anything very original. We're really just an edited aggregator. And we're putting context on stuff and we're translating stuff. But basically we're saying, okay, everybody out there on the web is creating their own media on their own space that they control. And we're just one set of people trying to help you filter out what some of the most interesting stuff around the world is. And that's really all we're doing. It's much, much simpler than what Jay's trying to do. Jay's really trying to do original. I mean, we're saying, you know, there's a lot of people doing original stuff, whatever it is, but we're not really directing it. We've talked about whether we should, but that would create such, that's like a whole new set of
headaches.
People, and you know, it's a huge new project to kind of go in that direction.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we're kind of doing the easy stuff.
Right. Well, I think this is really hard. We don't know right now what kind of user culture we need. And in fact, right now, I would say the most likely outcome of newassignment.net is that it's going to fail right now. We don't know enough. If it tips over and it's like more likely that we'll succeed, I'll let you know. But right now, because you can't assume any of this. You can't, people don't participate the way you want them to, just because you want them to. That's like one of the biggest lessons of the first stage of citizen journalism. And so you can't go into it with too many assumptions about how people are gonna behave. Because they don't necessarily do what you want them to do, and why should they? So we're going to have to figure this out. And that's why assignment zero is to go and talk to everybody who has experience with this kind of effort and ask them what they know. Because it's so hard to do that you can't do it without finding out at least what we know so far. So that's why I went and talked to this guy. Asa Dulzer, this guy's in charge of organizing all the volunteers who've contributed to all the Mozilla projects, especially Firefox, but not just Firefox. And I went and I talked to him for several hours, and I asked him what he's learned about volunteers and why they participate and what it takes to get them to keep participating and how you have to reward those who contribute the most. And how he does that, and what to watch out for. And so my hope is that if we talk to 50 Asa Dulzers all around the landscape, that we'll just know enough that we won't make the most obvious mistakes. We'll make new mistakes. We'll make less obvious mistakes and learn from those. But this is, it's really, really hard. And as more sites emerge, and there's more to do on the web, and it just becomes bigger and more fun, where's all that time going to come from? You know, I think that's a really important question. Fortunately, we're not expecting everyone to contribute to our assignments. We don't need thousands of people. Lots of assignments can work really, really well. If you have 20 committed volunteers, that's still 20 more people than you had before. So the bottom line answer to your question, Colin, is we don't know. Other questions?
You talk about some of the collaborations that you hope to do with WashingtonPost.com, the BBC. How do you guarantee the exclusivity that they're going to do so that another news organization doesn't look at the data that are being compiled and say, gee, that looks like it could make a pretty good story. I think I'll do something with it right now. And the Washington Post is saying, wait a minute, that was supposed to be ours.
Right. Several answers to that, Dan. The first is that most people are lazy and they don't do what they could do. So that's one answer. Lots of people could take what you're compiling and do their own version of it, but they're lazy, so they won't. Secondly, is we'll keep secret anything we have to keep secret to accomplish the project. So I don't think this is a realm for hard and fast rules. It's better to be open. Newassignment.net works on open principles. But if you have to keep something secret for the sake of the project, then by all means, we will do that. And then after it's published, we'll let you know how we did it and open up as transparently as we can. So that's a second answer. And a third answer is the LA Times really going to steal something that the Washington Post started and do it instead? It just, the way that respect works between peers, that's not how you gain respect.
Especially
by stealing people's projects.
All the bloggers will blog about the fact that it's stolen.
Right. I mean, it would be just it's so easy to embarrass somebody for doing that I'm really not worried about it. A fourth answer is, my whole career, I've always worked in public. I've always told everybody what I'm doing and what my ideas are. I never keep anything secret. And I almost never get anything stolen. It's like, I think people who don't have a lot of ideas worry about their ideas being stolen. People who have ideas, it's like, please steal this so I can work on something else, you know? So that's sort of my attitude.
Kind of have a half-formed question. I'm going to go for it anyway. I'll start by alluding to two books that are out there that are kind of related but are counterpoints. One is Malcolm Gladwell, Blink, where one well-informed, experienced person's intuitive view of the world is really what you need to know about things. The other one, what's the name of the New Yorker guy? The wisdom of, thank you, the wisdom of the crowds guy. Of these two approaches, which do you see New Assignment strain more towards? I mean, one is having an editor that has to field a lot of information, and the problem will then be, how do you filter this vast amount of information? In a sense, the more successful you are, the more intangible the problem becomes. The other way to go about it is have the crowd themselves determine what the story is and have some kind of automated way in which you collect information and filter it and let people vote on it and see what flips to the top. Or all the above.
Well, now you're coming to the genius of the Pro-Am method. Because my ideal is that some hybrid of those two things is going to be the strongest formula. And so we rely on the genius of an individual editor, and in some cases an individual writer, and the wisdom of the crowd and the efforts of volunteers and the distributed part of the equation. And so I think that the strongest results are going to come from some still-to-be-worked-out combination of those two things. That's why we have professional editors working with lots of users. That's why, when needed, we will hire AE journalists to bring this project in. And the reason for that is that if you know anything about editorial environments, if you know anything about how journalism works, the thing that causes people to produce is the deadline. I mean, everybody knows that. And it's the requirements of production itself that finally force people to choose. Who are you going to put into the story? Who are you going to leave out? How much room do you have? Oh, that'll determine how many angles we explore. And so my idea was that if you combine the discipline and structure of deadline-driven, production-minded editors with the expanse and energy of distributed users, that somewhere in there is the sweet spot, if you will. That's our hypothesis. We don't know, again, if that's true, but from the first stage of citizen journalism projects, which don't have editors and don't have this structure, it would seem that it might be a good idea. We're going to find out how the two connect to each other. But it's going to take an editor with a feel for the crowd, which is a lot harder than ordering your own troops into battle.
Just another thought to throw out there is that, I don't know if this has come across your desk or not. I mean, one idea would be to put in place a genetic algorithm of some sort for your sources as well, so that they could be weeded through automatically over time. I don't know how you would do that. You could have different sources vote on sources and vote them off the newspaper.
Right.
I mean, ideally, you want a large number, but not too large number of fantastic people informing your work.
Right.
Not clouded by too much of the masses.
Don't you have danger of tyrannies of the majority happening that way?
Of what?
Tyrannies of the majority happening that way.
You do. You do.
Yeah.
And like the lone voice of reason against, you know, a whole bunch of bigots getting voted out, you know, in certain circumstances.
That's what the editor's job is,
you
right?
You do. You're right. That's why we have editors. But we are going to try and create several overlapping systems to increase reliability. One of them is a reputation system for contributors, so that we know who's contributed to us before and whether they were reliable or not. Because if they are reliable, chances are the next thing they contribute will be reliable too. So we need some way of tracking that. We can't start over each time and decide whether we're confident in what you gave us. We have to be able to accumulate our sense of your reliability as a provider. Secondly, we're going to need a system for clearly being able to tell how much confidence we have in a piece of information. So that's rating not people, but data. Whether it's raw unchecked, whether it's been verified once, whether it's been fact-checked, double-checked, confirmed. And the interaction of those two systems is where the strength, I think, is going to be. The people system and the fact system. And our director of verification, Craig Silverman, is working on exactly that. So there's an example of even if that fails, like it doesn't work, just the attempt to put those things together, I think, is going to be very useful and could result in a lot of progress.
Yeah, how are you defining failure anyway? I mean, it seems like it shouldn't be defined too narrowly.
Failure would be really boring results.
Like boring people to death would be failure. It would be a success no matter what, because you'd at least come up with some systems or some lessons learned or something.
That's the idea. That's my secret.
I have a question about the identity of your project. I mean, do you see yourself more like a laboratory of new kinds of journalism, or eventually, if you success, you want to see yourself as a newspaper, like an online newspaper where the relationship with the audience would be like people getting in every day to get wonderful stories? Or how do you see yourself?
Good question. Great question. I see this as a temporary burst of effort and innovation designed to be imitated and spread its results. It's not a new institution. If it were wildly successful, I suppose we could give birth to a new kind of news network. I really don't see that happening. What I see is a couple of years, 2-3 years of creativity that draws a lot of people in because a lot of people are interested in the same problems and discovers things that then spread out and lots of people take them up. And so our idea is steal this book.
Good.
You know, steal this project, take this method. And the site itself will be built on open source methods. The way that the site is developed will itself be an open source project. The code will be completely borrowable. Everything about it will invite users to take, borrow, steal, and adapt. So I think that with a goal like that, where you don't have to preserve yourself, you don't have to find $150 million endowment or some big brother who's going to fund you forever, and where your only goal is new knowledge, it's a lot easier to succeed. And if, for example, if we figure out how a beat reporter can work with a smart mob and do better stories, lots of people are going to do that, right? So you just have to show most of this is going to be like way easier to explain when you can point to a project as against the labored explanations I'm giving you of something that doesn't exist yet. So a lot of this, the work of persuading people that it's possible, can only be done by showing it to them. It's like trying to describe a house, a beautiful house. You know, it's really hard, but if you have the blueprint, you just say, that's the house, and then people can see it. So that's what we're trying to do.
So sitting here at a university with about 20-odd students in the room who are studying journalism, I wonder what discussions have you had with other faculty members, like Dan, or like Dan Gilmore, who's also teaching a class at spring at UC Berkeley's
graduate. I visited that class,
About how journalism students and journalism schools might get involved. Or what have you thought? And not just limited, in fact, to journalism students, but students generally.
I think once we get going, there will be unlimited opportunities for that. And that classes could, in fact, be the sort of core group that really helps the project along. And this is one of the possible sources of high quality labor for newassignment.net. And it would be in the interest of the students, because if you learn how to work in these open methods, I think that you will become very valuable as a young journalist. This would be part of my message to journalism students. So there's that. We have an environmental reporting program at NYU that's a graduate program specifically about science and environmental reporting. And I've discussed with the head of that program doing a project in environmental journalism where those students, about 10, 12 to 15 of those students, would be part of the core group that would help run the project out there on the web. I think that's a very exciting model that would be definitely doable. And it wouldn't be limited to journalism students. I would hope journalism students would be very interested in this project, but I know from experience that they, not these students, but others, tend to adopt prematurely the superficial and cynical attitudes of their elders. It's one of the saddest things in the world, actually. Young curmudgeons, there's like nothing more depressing than that. But that's what tends to happen. However, there's a whole generation of young journalists, some of them are in school, most of them are a few years out of school, who are born on the web, so to speak. And they are definitely a constituency of this project, because in their first few years on the job, they're incredibly frustrated with their organizations, frustrated with their bosses, frustrated with the elders that they have to defer to, who don't actually know very much about the web. And those people, if we could find a way to reach them, they would be real contributors. So we'll put the word out.
Have you considered the inclusion of other types of media, like video and photos? And I guess, are you recruiting people to help give those sorts of things? And do you see that inclusion following the traditional editorial process? Or how do you see yourself, you know, working with other types of media?
I'm very interested in that. I would like this project to include all media. It's easier said than done. But we started a little bit with this project, which newassignment.net consulted on, which simply asked people to photograph what it looks like when you go and vote and download the results. And even though it was a bit schematic, it's not really journalism per se. It was an attempt to start this process. But I'm interested in what happens if you go and you ask everybody to video the same thing. That would be kind of, I don't think we've done that yet. I just want to do it because I'm interested in how it would work. So, which is different than YouTube, YouTube is anything you're making, any video you're making, post it here, right? Our idea would be, no, everybody go out and do a video report of the same kind, and we'll have lots of them, right? That would be interesting if we could figure out how to do it, the right occasion for doing it, and so forth. So I'm interested in that, and certainly if you want to be our director of video projects, the job is open. There's an opening for you in newassignment.net. But certainly, this is something that we should figure out, and it would be really exciting to figure it out.
Any final questions?
Well, I have one, but I don't know. It's kind of channeling the digital divide skeptic people who I have some sympathy for. In there's a concern, obviously. I love blogging, I love citizens media, I love the internet, I spend all my time on it. But there's a concern that as journalists turn increasingly to the blogosphere and to the web for their story ideas, their sources, and for the wisdom of crowds help, that increasingly the voices, concerns, issues of people who are not online will be less reflected in media as opposed to more. And that there's this danger that, I mean, I don't think it stops us from doing any of this, but, you know, as we keep in mind sort of the overall picture, given that the whole point of this is to democratize the media, to what extent do we have to go offline? To what extent do these types of projects need to be combined with outreach in schools, in communities where people don't habitually blog? Because we're seeing around the world that blogging is an upper middle class phenomenon. I'm just curious about your thoughts on that score, because we're struggling with that ourselves.
Do the people who raise this problem with you ever have a solution?
No, nobody has a solution other than outreach and other than things like universal broadband access or something like that. But, you know, we're kind of far from there. Or the other thing that some point to is more active exploration of ways to tie new media and old media together, you know, using participatory old media. So, for instance, talk radio, and how do you tie talk radio and the use of cell phones or text messaging or something into the blogosphere so that you can have a wider range of participation from a wider range of socioeconomic strata. And, you know, there's some discussion of that. I haven't seen anything particularly implemented.
Right.
I've heard talk.
Right.
But I don't know. I'm just curious to know your thoughts.
I have several thoughts on it. First, I've never been at a conference on the internet where this question hasn't come up, ever. So I'm glad you raised it. So my record is secure, right? Nor have I been at one where anyone had a solution to it, although there are ameliorative measures that one can take. Third is, I think it's unfair to ask an individual project like this one to solve the digital divide. I just don't think that's fair demand to place on a project. And my fourth answer is, I would love to take a city, any city that was of a decent size, and figure out how to create a network of correspondence where you had one person in every school in that city, and they were all connected to one another, and they were an efficient operating network.
So like high school level?
Yeah, at every school, I mean every building in Indianapolis, in Kansas City. And of course, that would be lots of schools where people aren't very often online. So maybe there's a way of doing projects that starts to include the people who are not online. And that's just an example of one.
Yeah.
But I think if you were able to wire a network like that where you had a person, a reporter, for every single building, right, and you were somehow gathering from them regular reports, that you would begin to include in one way or another lots of people who are offline. So perhaps through methods like that, there's a way of addressing it. But I also feel like it's so hard to figure out how to do this for upper middle class educated white people that we just have to figure that out, you know, and then we'll be able to be able to spread those methods if they're actually efficient. Because part of what we're proposing here is that these methods are actually cheaper and easier. Therefore, they should be able to spread.
If you have broadband.
If you have broadband.
And PCs.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And if you have $100 laptops, you know, they will.
Well, on that note of challenge.
Thank you very much for your questions and insight.
Thank you. So please join me in thanking you.